This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We turn our attention now from outer space to our own planet, where the biggest story of any recent year would have to be climate change. Joining me now to go over some of this year's biggest developments in both the science and policy realms is Phil Duffy. He's president of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. Phil, always good to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Agreement. I mean, the past year has got to be enough to give you whiplash. This time last year, we were talking about the ratification of the Paris Agreement, putting that agreement into effect in near record time. And by this summer, President Trump was saying we were going to pull out.
Well, it seems dizzying, but I think in the long run, this will be seen as a bump in the road. You know, one of the things I found very encouraging from the week or so I spent at the most recent UN Climate Convention, which was last month, is just how determined the rest of the world is to move on with the process. And indicative of that is that actually the last two other nations who had not been part of the agreement, Syria and Nicaragua, have not signed on, now have. And I think that's symbolic of the commitment that the rest of the nations have to get on with this. You know, the other thing I would say about it is that it was already clear that the Trump administration was not going to pursue the policies it would need to pursue to meet our commitment under the agreement. So formal withdrawal, I think, merely puts a face on what was already happening.
How much of a tangible impact does this action have on the course of climate change in terms of, you know, emissions reductions or emissions that we actually create and how that translates into temperature change?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, actually. I mean, you know, the U.S. is a big emitter of greenhouse gases, the second biggest emitter. Our contribution is in the neighborhood of 20% of the global total. But what's harder to predict is how much effect federal policy has on those emissions. And the reason that's complex is that market forces are very powerful and have probably been the dominant reason why, in fact, U.S. emissions have gone down over the last 5 or 10 years. And the other thing that's happening is as the federal government steps back from its what I view as its responsibility to protect us from climate change, states and corporations and cities and other actors have actually stepped up their activity. So it's hard to assess, you know, what will be the net impact actually of the reversal, which I think will be temporary in federal policy.
You mentioned that you were in Bonn for this year's UN climate negotiations in November. The U.S. federal formal presence was pretty small, but there was a coalition of states and mayors from cities around the country that had kind of stepped up and said, we're going to be there. Governor Jerry Brown was actually given special envoy status to be there more formally. What was the mood and how much of a presence did that alliance from the United States
have? Well, it was very visible. You mentioned Governor Brown was there. Governor Schwarzenegger, who I'm a big fan of, was already there. Governor Inslee from Washington was there. Folks from Massachusetts actually were there as well. I met with two of state legislators who are both promoting some really valuable climate change legislation here in Massachusetts. So those folks were highly visible. You know, certainly the U.S. did have a delegation and was, I'm told, a constructive voice actually in the actual negotiations. What was different this year is normally the United States has a pavilion which shows off the valuable government-funded climate change research that the U.S. government does. And I've been involved in putting that on. And that was not, that didn't happen this year. And in fact, the U.S. had one event which was, frankly, an embarrassing advertisement for the fossil fuel industry, which, as someone said, was sort of like talking about cigarettes at a cancer convention. It was strange.
Let's talk about the potential cuts to climate research. Do we have a sense of where federal funding for climate research, I mean, as a subset of all science funding, which there's a lot of fear about taking cuts?
Wouldn't we like to know? I will say this, you know, if you look historically at global change research funding going back, we've tracked it going back since to about 1990, the changes are not as big as you might expect in the sense of, you know, different administrations come and go and so on. So, you know, no one knows. The president's budget had very severe cuts for a lot of global change research. Members of Congress who I've talked to have pronounced that dead on arrival, his budget. You know, it's likely that the first thing that will happen is a continuing resolution, which means a continuation at last year's funding level, which, you know, frankly, folks in the research community would be very happy. That would regard that as at this point as a very good outcome.
I'm talking with Phil Duffy. He's president of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. If you talk about climate change related events this year, I think the hurricane season and simultaneously the wildfire season. I mean, between Harvey, Irma, Maria, each of them record setting in their own way. And then the size and the intensity of the wildfires out in California, I think, forcing a lot of people to realize that we are living in a new normal climate-wise.
Right, except that characterization makes it seem like it's going to be static from here on. And the problem is it's going to continue to get worse. But you're absolutely right. And those outcomes, the hurricanes, the intense hurricanes and the wildfire activity are both expected consequences of climate change, and not only expected, but actually observed. And in the case of wildfire, if you look at the record, in the last 30 years, the area burned is something like six times larger than it was in the previous 30 years. It's an enormous increase. It's clearly related. Not all of that increase is due to climate change, but probably most of it is. And you can see just the year-to-year variations correlate very, very well with the high temperature years. You know, the other thing that's driving the huge increase in fire activity is just the fire season is so much longer because of the time of year when it's warm enough to have fire is just so much longer.
Well, you mentioned the high temperatures, yeah. And obviously we can't really put 2017 into the record book quite yet because there's still analysis for scientists to be doing, but it's looking like at this point 2017 is on track to be the second hottest year on record, following right. after 3 years of successively not only setting the record, but in some cases setting the record by the largest margin.
Right.
I mean, okay, one hot year here, one hot year there, but right. this is a trend, a strong trend.
Oh, it's certainly a trend. I mean, but it's actually right that you really can't put too much stock in any one year. But, you know, assuming 2017 comes in about as expected, the last 4 years will have been the four warmest years on record. 17 of the 18 warmest years will have occurred after 2000. So there's clearly a trend, but there's other really important indicators like sea surface temperatures, decline in sea ice, the decay of the Greenland ice sheets, actually the temperature of the deep ocean. There's many, many indicators, all of which point very conclusively to a planet that's continuing to warm.
I'm talking with Phil Duffy, president of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. As with every year, there were dozens, if not hundreds, of new studies that were published. There were government reports, the National Climate Assessment, the Arctic Report Card, all, as you say, with these indicators pointing in the same direction. Two of the most concerning developments this year were studies showing that both the Arctic, the permafrost in the Arctic that holds as much carbon as we already have in the atmosphere, and then also our tropical forests, which we've always thought as a huge carbon sink, that in both cases, those now appear to be releasing more carbon than they're actually storing.
Yeah, you know, the consequences of Arctic warming, which is very rapid, it's about two or three times as rapid as the rest of the planet, the consequences of Arctic warming are really global, and you mentioned permafrost, thawing permafrost. What's worrisome about that is, as you said, the emissions of greenhouse gases, which raises the possibility of a self-reinforcing cycle.
Which, so as this previously frozen ground thaws,
greenhouse gases are emitted. Those greenhouse gases lead to more warming, which causes more thawing and so on. And if that gets going in a serious way, there's no way to shut it down.
So what about the tropical forests and the fact that they now also seem to be releasing more carbon than they're storing.
Well, that's right. And that's a new result, actually, that happens to come out of work done at Woods Hole Research Center. And what we found was rather surprising, which is that, as you just said, the tropical forests are emitting more than they're absorbing. And that was a surprise. And it's not exactly clear what the reason for that is, but it's primarily some sort of small-scale forest loss. And that could be just small-scale deforestation, for example, from what we call smallholder farmers. It could also be consequences of what we call natural disturbance, things like drought and wildfire. It's a useful thing to know because the policy focus has been on eliminating, essentially, clear-cutting. And yet it appears that the main problem is this small-scale forest loss.
So on top of all that, we now know that this year, for the first time after 3 years of static global emissions, carbon emissions have risen again.
Yep.
Is there any good news?
There's actually a lot of good news. But just to get to the point of this year's greenhouse gas emissions, it seems like, yes, they will go up by about 2%. About half of that 2% seems to be coming from China. You know, there's two underlying things going on. I mean, the global economy and the economy in China and the economy in the developed world are decarbonizing. In other words, the proportion of energy that comes from renewables is actually continuing to grow. And those are very strong and positive trends. But what's happening, particularly in China, for example, is just the economy is growing so rapidly that, yes, they're adding a lot of renewables and they're investing more than anyone, but they're still also adding fossil plants. And that's why you see emissions going up. But, you know, overall, there's a lot of reasons for optimism. I mean, the fact is we now do have this Paris Agreement, this framework for controlling climate change. We have major investments in renewable energies. It's also true that the developed countries, the U.S. and the EU, our emissions have gone down over the last 5 to 10 years. And, you know, the increasing cheapness of renewable energy is a very, very powerful force, which is going to continue to make their adoption more widespread. You know, and finally, just in this country particularly, this sort of bottom-up activity, which we mentioned before, activity by states, by cities, by corporations, I mean, those are tremendously optimistic developments.
That's Phil Duffy. He's president of the climate change think tank Woods Hole Research Center. Phil, thanks, and Happy New Year.
Well, same to you. Thank you.